Welcome back to Overserved, everybody. I am Ari Bendersky, and I'm here with my good pal and my phenomenal co-host,
Maggie Hennessy. Hello.
How you doing, Marge?
Okay.
And we are taking a deep dive with the people behind Chicago's thriving culinary scene. Most weeks, we invite on guests a chef, a sommelier, a restaurateur, a farmer, or another one of the fabulous people who plies with all the food and drink we enjoy to learn about their story, who they are, why they got into this crazy food world, and what makes them tick. This week, we are really excited and super happy to have our friend Jenny Wagoner. She is the beverage director for Sepia and Proxy Restaurants in Chicago. She is here in the Overserved hot seat. But first, we need to thank our sponsor. This podcast was made by Mess, a design, development, and content studio located in Chicago. Mess helps brands tell their story online and off. Find out more by visiting madeatmess.com. So to kick things off, earlier this year, another acclaimed Indian restaurant opened by chef and owner Sujan Sarkar, who is from India, has restaurants in New York and San Francisco. He opened in...
On Randolph.
Right. That's what I said.
You got it.
Yeah.
So they opened the restaurant on Randolph Street near Halsted earlier this year to much fanfare and acclaim. People love it. But what's interesting is that this week news came out that Jaipur is coming back. And not only is it coming back, it is opening up right next door.
Oof.
To Rue, which is really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you being a huge fan of Jaipur, you've not been to Rue yet, correct?
I haven't.
Nor have I.
No, it's on my
Sadly.
List.
Same.
So we probably have to go together and talk about each other's haircuts while we eat.
Yeah, again. So I'm never going to let that one down.
But no, I was a huge fan of Jaipur. To be honest, for them, it's probably the homecoming, I would guess, supersedes, you know, opening directly next to a competitor is sort of like a gauntlet throw.
Yeah, 100%.
And they were known with that. They were associated with that stretch. So, I mean, if they could get it, I would say that's probably why they did it.
And honestly, I think they're going to be slammed from day one.
Me too. And to be honest as well, the scene for Indian food in Chicago has never been better. So I say more the merrier.
More
Keep
the
it
merrier.
Coming. Yeah. It's like an excellent time for... And not just, regional Indian, Nepali, like we're seeing this region kind of blow up in Chicago. So I'm pumped about it.
And really quick side note, speaking of restaurants that I'd been wanting to go to that I finally did go, Tortello.
Oh, what'd you think?
Amazing.
Pasta's crazy good.
They're making it right in the front window.
Yeah.
Charming space. It's like there were people lined up to place their orders and then lined up even more to wait to get their table because it is fast casual. And it's not a big space.
No. So when I reviewed it, that was my negative check was that it is crowded. And when you're eating a $20 plate of gorgeously handmade pasta, I want to be in a space where I can slow down and enjoy. But I wolfed down my, what was it? It was like Chusoni. It was gorgeous. And it was in this like saffron. And so I really loved it, but I felt like I ate it too fast, partly because I was feeling rushed, like sort of harried in the space, and also maybe because I wanted to get out of there because it was frantic. I don't know, but it's beautiful and delicious and
light and
go.
Lively. And also, and Dario Moni, who's the owner with his wife, Jill Gray, could not be more charming and so cool. And we chatted a bunch. And what I loved also is that in the bathroom, not only are you getting an Italian lesson, there's a man speaking English words, and then there's a woman speaking them back in Italian.
Mm.
So it's like you're learning while you're going. But also the wallpaper in there is this really beautiful vintage print of a store, which turns out is his grandfather.
Yeah, it was designed by Siren Betty, Nicole Alexander.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and she
Shout
has an eye, and she... We'll dig and near and far to find these amazing. That she found that Vespa as well. That there's a powder blue Vespa suspended from the ceiling, just amazing. But yeah,
and also if anybody's listening and you decide if anybody's listening to us,
anyone, hello.
If you do go to not if but when
way
you,
to have confidence in your podcast, Ari.
Not if but when you do go to Tortello, the house made focaccia, with herbs, and then
it's a pillow.
With the house-made ricotta and the honey, you have to get it. It is,
I'm in. I'm in.
It's phenomenal.
I love all breads.
Me
If you got a homemade bread, give me your bread. Yeah. I'm here for it.
Bread, please. Bread followed by pasta, please.
It was a carb.
Carbs,
heavy.
Please.
It was a carb light meal.
This podcast is so Midwest it hurts sometimes.
Yes. Oh, it's gonna get more Midwest.
Oh, it will.
We're like, we like carbs. What's up?
Yeah.
So then, just another point to talk about was last week, I think, or even the week before, the World's 50 Best Organization came out with their World's 50 Best Bars, and in it, they present every year, they present an industry, what's the title? Industry Icon Award. And they presented it to the 78-year-old German veteran of the bartending world, Charles Schumann, which immediately came back with a ton of backlash because he apparently is a misogynist and like is on the record of saying things like a bar is no place for women, for a woman. The important characters are always men. There's no place for a woman behind the bar after 3 p.m. Women can come, but they're not wanted, essentially.
3 p.m.? What a weird...
Oh, he... This guy is vile.
And like, what?
And the truth is, like, so the Icon Award, I think it's like a recognizing the achievement over a career, moving the industry forward.
This is backward.
It's completely. It's completely backward and disgusting, and rightfully was they were called out. To be fair, who... It's like 500 judges on the 50 best that decide. Who voted for this guy? They should take responsibility as well.
They did, and I guess they didn't really come out quickly enough with...
They didn't realize... they voted for him in the first place. Right.
Like, if they don't do research and background and all of these things, it seems like a...
Do you know what you need for to find all that stuff out that he said?
Google.
You need Google.
Right.
That's it. That's all you need.
I mean, you could even use Yahoo.
Maggie's segment,
or Bing.
Google
you
it.
You could use Bing.
That's your new segment.
Hey, Google 50 it. World's best, Google it.
Also, what a bum name. We're the 50, we do this one list, the 50 best list. What are we going to call our company? How about 50 best?
Well, I don't know if that's the name of the company. It's sponsored by S. Pellegrino.
Oh, I was like, I was like, what a bum move. Like, dude.
50best.com.
Yeah. 50.
Well, but I actually, the thing that I was really impressed with was how swiftly women in the bartending industry, because I'm part of a closed online Facebook group called Thirsty that was created by Thirsty Mag. And immediately people were jumping on that, decrying it, setting up Twitter account or Facebook or Instagram accounts to show the strength of women and like women behind the stick at bars and mixing cocktails. And it was just a really great, and then all the men jumping in to support all the women. I thought it was just a really beautiful moment. And it's also, I mean, they could have used this as a time for a life lesson, they being the organization.
Well, to be fair, they did after this, the swift rebuke. They've now claimed that for next year, the judging panel will be half. It will be gender parity. So it'll be
shocking.
Yeah, because it's like, oh,
so that's what it takes.
Nice. But the problem that's what it takes. Like, you need to like basically pick a misogynist as a icon, and then they go, oh wait, whoops, let's make sure that there's better representation on our panel. What the fuck?
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, even the restaurant side of things, it's the majority of the restaurants are helmed by men, and also then they still have a category of best female chef. Which is also like, I love that Eater calls them out every single year because it's just like, it's a head scratcher. It's like, why can't we just have best chef, period?
And the truth is, like, this whole greatness, you know, separate from personal life, that's over. You can't do it. That doesn't matter anymore. Let someone else step up. We've talked about this before. There are a million talented people who aren't shitheads.
Yeah, I think you have to be a good person for it to count, really.
Exactly. I agree. Yeah. And if you're in a position of where you have a platform, it's your responsibility to not be a shithead, I would say.
I mean,
I agree. You're an example. People are looking up to you. They're going to be following in your footsteps. Then you need to set a good example.
Exactly. Okay.
So that extra voice that you were just hearing commenting on this controversy was Jenny Wagoner, who was our guest today. Growing up in Indiana, Jenny was destined for the big city. After graduating from DePaul University,
go Tigers,
Jenny moved to New York, and while working in a music studio, because she had big dreams of being a singer, but then also was working at Be Our Guest's Blue Water Grill because she needed to make some cash, as most artists do, and her interest in pairing food with wine was sparked. She moved on to Miami eventually in 2007, working at restaurants and bars like Wish, Wynwood Kitchen and Bar, and Zuma before leaving to be the head sommelier in 2015 at Michael Mina's Strip Steak at the Fontainebleau Miami Beach. In 2017, Jenny was named wine director at Michelin-starred Sepia in Chicago and its next-door sibling Proxy, working alongside chef Andrew Zimmerman and owner Emmanuel Noni. At Sepia, Jenny oversees an eclectic 450-bottle list that was a finalist for a James Beard Foundation Awards in the Outstanding Wine Program category, and her approachable list at Sepia highlights female winemakers from around the globe. Jenny Wagoner, welcome to Overserve.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay!
We are super excited to have you here. So As we mentioned, you didn't initially work in the restaurant world. Talk about your time as a singer.
So it was kind of a mix between a singer and getting into food and wine. So everything kind of worked in tandem. Before I moved to New York, I actually packed my things after graduating from DePauw with a W and started going out west, because growing up in Indiana, I thought that Santa Barbara was like heaven. I saw pictures of it. I'm going to California. Going to California.
It was all those Spanish-style terracotta.
So amazing.
The OC theme
was
playing.
The weather just looks so beautiful. Yeah, totally. And so we packed up and started driving across the country and ended up in Vail because we wanted to play nine holes of golf. And that was a really nice-looking golf course. Kind of weird. And then we ended up staying there for a little over a year.
Wow.
I think 2 years.
Because you got stuck in the sand trap.
Because we were like, we were both writing majors. I was with a friend of mine. And we decided to get jobs at the Vail Daily newspaper.
Oh, cool.
So I covered high school sports.
Oh my
God. It was fun. And then I also worked at a restaurant called Pepe's, which is an Austrian restaurant right on Bridge Street in Vail, where you wear dirndls, but like very long ones, very, you know, not cute in any way.
Maybe not authentic.
Possibly. Actually, the owners were Pepe and Shaika Gramshammer. Pepe was an Olympic ski champion,
wow.
And they like started Vail.
Oh my God.
It's pretty cool.
They might have been authentic during those.
I think they were authentic.
All right.
Yeah, I'll show you some pictures.
Yes, please.
So I would.
I wish we were the moth right now that we could say, and look at our, if you want to see a picture of Jenny and her, I don't know how to
pronounce
it.
You know what's
going to happen. One picture.
Don't hype them up on your own podcast. They got enough free promo.
Do you know what's going to happen? We're going to post the picture of Jenny in the dirndl on the Overserved Instagram.
Oh, that's great, because there's a picture of me. So going into that, the one picture that I could find that I think my mother sent me, I am sitting, I sang opera ski, so I would serve Wiener Schnitzel, and then I would sing from like 3 to 5 in my dirndl.
Oh,
that's amazing.
God.
And then,
amazing.
Yes, this is how New York started. And so then I would sing from 3 to 5, and then I worked as a singer later in the evening at another place called Red Lion. So I did like nighttime singing and daytime singing, one in a dirndl, one in regular clothes.
Oh my God.
So you've always been a hustler.
Yeah, you gotta hustle. Yeah.
You gotta hustle.
So that's when the studio owner from New York met me in Vail, because he would vacation there.
Okay.
And so he heard me sing and was like, oh, this is great. Why didn't you come out? And I was like, wow, this is like going to be the best thing ever. I just got discovered. This is my story. This is my story. I have to start writing it down. This is going to be so great. I can't wait to tell this. And up here I am.
Yeah.
But just not a famous singer. Just really into wine and food. So I ended up in New York and working at a music studio there. The owner and I are still really good friends. It was really impossible to make any money because everybody is so talented there.
Yeah.
So I started working at Blue Water Grill amongst a bunch of other fantastic, successful singers, actors. Like, you go home after work and you see somebody that you just worked with on Law and Order.
Oh my God.
Wow.
I quickly saw that maybe this could be a hobby more so than, you know, profession. But
that's such an interesting point of like where food and wine and entertainment intersect is. And it's probably similar in LA. Like, I mean, Michael Muser was a theater major.
Yeah.
You all convene over, you know, restaurant work because you're trying to pay the bills.
Of course.
Between.
You end up having to have that sort of position or work in hospitality.
Totally.
And I mean, if you think about it, you have all these actors and you're essentially on stage on the floor.
Performing.
So it makes perfect sense.
Restaurant culture is a part of American culture because all the people who make American culture have either worked at or spent time at a restaurant.
Amen.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. You often find you're like, oh, you're a trumpet player? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What? Or you're on stage or like, it's really cool.
The fun one was always when the person would like disappear for like 3 months and you're like, oh, what's up? And they come back and you're like, oh yeah, I was just on tour.
Yeah. No, yes. It's amazing. It makes for a bunch of smaller stories within, you know, the story of hospitality.
The land of misfit entertainers.
Not that we need to go on a tangent, but that's what's interesting about Nashville is that they already have a shortage of quality people to work in the restaurants, but then it gets even harder because everybody goes on tour
everybody
all the time
because
they're all musicians.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, okay. So you're working at
a restaurant. Yes.
And so what really was the spark for you that that ignited that you're like, all right, I'm not going to be a professional singer. I really want to go into wine and food.
So while I was working at Blue Water Grill, this was the first opportunity. I mean, it was very shocking to me how high level the service was there. Mm-hmm. The amount of knowledge that you needed to accrue and provide the service you need to provide to guests was clearly levels beyond what I had worked in before. So it really pushed me to work harder, to learn more. It was just awesome in many ways. So you kind of get an education just being on the floor. We had I don't know what her position was at the time, but she's now a master sommelier. She has a couple of places. Laura Manick, Master Sommelier, she was in charge of our wine program there.
Okay.
At the time, I think she was overseeing several restaurants for Beer Guest. I wasn't really into the scene at that time, so I don't know exactly what she was teaching us, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I just remember how excited she was. She was super young, and I was just taking notes, like feverishly studying and like really into it. I'm like, didn't realize that wine was like that. But she would tell stories that connected her experiences with people and wine, and I'm like, wow, she just created a whole small story for me within one sip, which was really cool.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's rich.
And so I had that, and I decided to go. I wanted to take classes because I'm like, I need to really learn. I need to go do this. So, but I was broke, clearly. So I somehow talked to the International Wine Center. They were super nice. I'm like, I will volunteer. I'll come in early and leave late. Like, what can I do? And so I think they gave me a little deal and I helped clean, which was great. Yeah. So I took some WSET classes there and started working.
Wait, what does that stand for?
Wine Spirits Education Trust.
Okay.
So there's like kind of, there are a few ways to go, but that's one of the more, many people go through WSET. It's offered here in Chicago as well.
Oh, okay.
So you can like Google it and find some classes. Oh, it's really fun.
Google it.
Just yeah. You could have Googled it just like 50 Best. Could have Googled that one.
Today's theme.
Google it.
That's your new segment.
Google it.
That could be
Google
pretty
it.
Good, actually.
That would actually be pretty fun. Yeah.
It would be.
So, tell people one thing to Google a week.
Educate yourself.
That's right. Oh, but so you're clearly a hungry and very curious person.
I am. In general, I think I've always wanted to see the world. I think wine provided this thing where I could integrate travel, which I love the way I was brought up. It was amazing. It is amazing still. My family's still here. But we didn't really get a chance to travel. Like yeah. We would go visit my Aunt Kathy and go to Disney World, or we would go to Indianapolis Zoo, or we'd go camping. And all of those things are brilliant. But I wanted to see all the things I couldn't access when I was young.
Yeah.
And wine was just this thing where you meet a winemaker and they're like, they almost always will say, let me know when you're in town.
Yeah.
And I guarantee most people don't say, okay, yeah. But I will be like, hey, I'm going to go out exactly. There. So
what
remember that one time that you might have made that offer like, that I don't
like
know if
it's like 9 months
meant.
Later, you're like, hey.
I'm like, remember me?
Remember when
I know
you flippantly
don't.
Jenny's
said,
here. What's up?
And you didn't mean it to
are
come.
You busy?
Are you busy?
I'm here.
You knock on the door
right now.
I'm at your house.
Hi.
Totally. So I'm like, okay, we can like make these trips based on these sort of relationships. And you... If you love to talk and you get excited about things, yeah. I get just excited, clearly.
Yeah.
So what was
you make
the first,
friends.
Once you started studying, what was the first destination you went to where you got to go see a winery and meet with a winemaker and walk the fields and the vineyards?
So this is an excellent tie-in to something I wanted to talk about anyway. My first international trip was in 2013. I went to Alto Adige with Arthur Hahn.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was kind of, it was an organized trip, maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 people or less. And that's when I first met Arthur, and we kind of just clicked on that trip, but we were like buds.
Okay, and tell us who Arthur Hahn is.
So Arthur Hahn was a previous beverage director for Sepia, mm-hmm. and then for Proxy. Mm-hmm. Also just an amazing wine professional and
it's
a good friend of mine.
Being,
he's
period.
Just a really good
With
person.
Awesome fashion.
Yeah, I know. Like, so when I first style. Started, people were like, well, you don't dress like Arthur, but...
Oh
no, yeah, no, but they're right.
Nobody,
so it's okay. I mean,
nobody dresses like
I was just like, I have like, I mean, aside from just taking over this amazing program, I also need to go shopping, which was kind of like,
great.
Man, can you come over and give me some fashion advice as well?
Just give me some of your old hand-me-downs, Arthur.
I need a bow tie.
What accent is this?
I don't know.
Hey, y'all.
We talked about Indiana.
Oh, okay. No said. No said.
Okay.
Shout
so
out to
New
French
York,
Lake.
You eventually then made it down to Miami.
Yes.
Why Miami?
You know, that's such an excellent question because I asked myself that for about the first 3 years I was there.
Yeah.
But I got to Miami because, so in the mix of all this, while I'm working at the restaurants and like, I worked at a wine shop for a little bit. I was trying to put together like the time frames. I think they were all like kind of at the same time. Back to the hustle thing.
Yeah.
I think it was just a lot at the same time. But I was also booking bands for the studio. So like it was rehearsal space and also you could do like showcases and things like that there. And so I was booking this band from Miami and fell in love with the guy who was the lead singer and he's like, move to Miami. And I
Typical.
Was like, oh, this is going to be
oh.
so great. I'm in love. We're going to go on tour. Maybe I can even sing. I don't
right.
know.
There
and then...
Is.
In yeah, that's why. Totally. Hello. It could have been like one of those moments, you know, romance everywhere, but it was not that. And then we dated for a couple of years and then I'm like, oh, well, I was already starting to work in wine. Well, I was a server working at this really cool organic Italian restaurant, which I thought was really interesting. I'm like, organic Italian, huh? I was reading about it online. And it's like, it was a husband and wife, Giancarla and Pino Bodoni, and like the one of their mothers, Maria Pia, and their kids. It was just a really small kind of thing. And they had 10 tables in the front. It was a really long all-Italian wine list. And I was working in New York at this Italian wine shop. So I'm like, I'm totally going to get into Italian wine. I wrote her an email that was like, it was really long. I wish I would get these from somebody when they're applying for a job, because it was like a whole dissertation about how I really want to be there.
Oh, God.
I was like, I really respect what you're doing. Like, I'm moving to Miami, and I was looking at it before I went over, and I just think what you're doing is so special. And like, I was reading all these reviews, and I love that it's a family and all of these things. And she's like, yes. You can like, okay, great. So I had a really wonderful time there, but and got in trouble often because I was like just learning about wine. So I'd have my Italian wine for dummies thing, and I'd just be like sitting in the back and we were slow. And she's like, you can't just lay back and read. I was like, but this is so much fun. There's so much wine. But that was a really cool start. Yeah. And so I just started working on wine at many places in Miami. Well, when I worked at Wish, I just asked, you know, do you mind if I work on the list? Because we didn't have a designated wine person or a designated sommelier. It was mostly the like a floor manager working on it or the general manager working on it.
And they were sort of doubling up.
Yeah. And so they were like, cool. It was great for them to be able to give that task to somebody that was interested in it.
Yeah.
And so I just started, you know, going to tastings and kind of being like, not, I wasn't really a sommelier, just someone that was interested in it, but was tasting among other people that were amazing tasters. And I just push my way in, I guess.
But I mean, it's a smart way to do that, because then you ended up at Michael Mina's restaurant at the Fontainebleau, and Michael Mina is no slouch of a chef. I mean, he's an acclaimed, world-renowned chef. What was it like to oversee a wine list at a place under his purview?
I have only the most amazing things to say about Mina Group. I felt like that was... Zuma before that was also a bit, that was my first wine director position. Yeah. They're like a London-based restaurant group. Mm-hmm. But when I started working, they sought me out to work at Mina, and I just felt so proud, and I felt kind of, I was just excited. Yeah. And validation. I also felt, when I looked at the size of that list, that I was also a little bit in over my head.
Yeah. You're like, uh-oh.
I got to keep it real, you know? It's kinda,
how big was that list?
So it was over 1,000 selections, which before I was working on one, I think that we had, I don't know, 250... Jeez. Or something. So I went in, and I remember, because I'm trying to be prepared and I want to print out the list. I'm like asking them to send me a copy. And I'm just kind of looking at it like, okay, I'm not going to fail. I probably got hives. You know, I'm sensitive. So I probably got hives.
Wow.
Yeah. But
that's even like to just wrap your brain around 800 more bottles than you were overseeing before. Where were you in terms of your continuing education, or were you pretty self-education at that point?
I started taking, when I was at Zuma, I went through the Court of Masters and did my levels 1 and 2.
There we go.
And then.
So you were ready.
I mean, I don't know.
Are you ever
I don't know
ready?
If I'm ever ready for anything, but I'm like, ready. I want to try, you know? So.
That means you're ready, because you were just enthusiastic you're like.
I just want to push. I just want to, I get so bored if things are feeling level.
Yeah.
I'd rather like be uncomfortable. I'm almost always uncomfortable, but like in the most comfortable way. Like I'm comfortable with that because I know it will only make you better.
How did you approach it then, going with that huge of an increase? What was kind of...
I just broke it down in sections.
Yeah.
I asked for a lot of help. I think one of the things that's been helpful is the ability to ask for help. But there's so many amazing resources around, in the form of people or, you know, I hate to say it, Google, you know, Google.com. Google.com is an amazing.
Google.com. You sound like it's new.
It's a www.google.com.
HTTP.
But I mean, just kind of breaking it down, utilizing the people around you, and especially working with Mina Group, there was an amazing group of people. I mean, it's a huge company and a very wine focused company and a very, I mean, hospitality driven, but there are tons of sommeliers. Well, their restaurants each have sommeliers. There's an overseeing beverage director. So I could easily reach out and say, hey, will you review this list? Will you see what the, you know, are my notations correct? Does this look insane? If it is, just mark it up, send it back, and I'll learn from that. So just kind of worked on it that way.
Were you starting to develop at this point a point of view as a sommelier, like just was there something that you started to latch onto, whether it was a part of the world or a style of winemaking, or was there anything that was starting to take shape for you?
Definitely. I think I've always been drawn to smaller production wines, or okay. those wines, I don't know, they have a little bit more of a story. It reminds me of like the Italian restaurant. I was drawn to it because it was a husband and wife and their kids and the grandma paid us.
A little scrappy maybe.
Yeah, a little scrappy. But like something that produced something really beautiful without having to be huge. Although there are a lot of huge producers that I think are fantastic. So it's not, I've never really been black and white about it. Like it's not, like there's a lot of gray areas. I'm not just like only small production or only this, but all of those things together.
It's such a huge world that to me that it would make sense to kind of almost streamline it by finding things that you can latch on to.
It's fun.
And, yeah, definitely.
And I also think, I mean, with people coming in from Europe or the winemakers coming in or whoever's representing the winery, if you can connect with those people, it's really fun too. You know, they'll come in and you'll just,
oh, right.
you'll form
it.
Bonds.
Right.
It's humans.
It's humans.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
I always feel like I want to support people that I care about, and I will form bonds with people when I talk to them face to face. So if I'm able to actually interact with them, it makes it more real and makes the wine more alive. Plus you can tell stories about, you know, the wine in a different way through a different lens than if you're just reading it from a piece of paper.
Exactly.
And I don't retain things unless I'm like doing them a little, you know, I can memorize, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
Right. I need to feel and do.
So after being at MENA, you decided to make the trek back to the Midwest. I don't know, what was it, your desire to come back?
I was just giving a shout out to the Midwest.
Oh, I didn't know what you were talking about.
I was just giving a shout out to the Midwest.
She's feeling it.
So was it your desire to be closer to family, or did Arthur reach out to you and say, hey, I'm moving to New York. We need somebody to fill the spot. I think you'd be great.
It was both of those things, and they happened at the perfect time.
Oh, amazing.
So when Proxy first opened.
It sounds like you have a lot of perfect timing moments in your life.
I have faith in like the way, I don't know. I just feel like
the universe works.
I believe it. I believe it. So I visited. It was funny because I was just going through old, I always keep menus from restaurants, like if they're tastings, because I hoard certain things. That's one of the things
it's
hoard.
It's like a concert poster.
It's like that. Yeah, that, highlighters, mechanical pencils. I just have a lot of weird things I hoard. But menus, I know. We can go into that in a different
On a very special episode of Overserved.
You do know that when the highlighter doesn't highlight anymore, you can throw them away.
I just keep buying new ones because I'm like, I think we're missing a blue out of that pack. Maybe I'll just buy a whole new pack.
Jenny, I'm smelling the highlighters. Are you smelling them? You can tell us. This is a safe space.
I do feel comfortable. So that's good. If I was going to talk about that, I'd talk about it now.
She would.
So, well, shoot. The menu. So I was looking back, and so 2013, when I met him, I was so excited to go to Sepia. And so I told Mom, like, we're going to go to Chicago. We're going to go to this restaurant. It's kind of fancy. We're going to do it. And we had an amazing time, found the menu, found the pairings. And it was really a cool circle back to what happened when I ended up moving back. And so it was kind of a perfect timing thing. I had reached out to Arthur when Proxy opened. I came in and dined at Proxy, and I was talking to Arthur, and I'm like, in this moment where I want to move back home, my grandparents are getting older, my brother has kids, everybody lives here. Mm-hmm. And I loved being away, but I was feeling like it was time to come back home. I also didn't want to change what I was doing. I felt very motivated in, you know, being a wine director and interacting with guests and all these things. And so he reached out to me one morning and was like, this is kind of weird. Like, it was 6 months between when I talked to him at Proxy and when he called me. He was like, I'll keep my ears to the ground and find out if there's anything opening. And then like 6 months later, he calls me, and it's like early in the morning. So I'm like, I thought he just sat on the phone. He's not going to call me at 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. And he was like, oh my gosh, I was just thinking, what about Sepia? And I was like, what?
Huh?
You know, cool. But wait, like, I kind of wanted to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Also, he's like, I'm moving. I'm like, oh, okay. So he said, I would love for you to come and speak with Emmanuel and Chef. And I kind of will leave it there, and we'll see if it works for everybody. And so I ended up flying up, had a really amazing conversation with Emmanuel and Chef. Super excited, but also just like, I don't know. You know, it's a big, they were like announcing that Arthur was leaving, and it was just like all of this other things wrapped around interviewing for a new job. I just felt like felt all this pressure to be
right. And they're also
great.
Big shoes to fill too.
Yeah. And I knew that. And I knew that people were going to be looking at me that way too. So, you know, you're just, it's a little bit stressful.
Yeah.
And then you're moving to a new city after being somewhere for so long. It was just like, I was on my mom's love seat because I didn't have a place to live right away. It was a lot trying to learn this list, which is awesome. And then also the other list. So we had, you know, proxy as well.
Yeah.
When I came in, I think it was still Loire themed or moving, or no, it was AAA. So it was Austria, Argentina, Australia.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it is. Super fun. And so I had to think about a theme change. I had to think about, I moved like December, the last week of December. So I also had to think about wine pairings for New Year's Eve. Like,
oh my God.
We needed them now.
Yeah. And the year was?
2017.
17. Okay.
So Arthur had already, we didn't work together at the same time. Like we weren't, he already left for New York. So I think in November, I'm not sure, but maybe a month or so before. And so I came in and basically just called him all the time and text him all the time. And everybody else was super helpful.
And Manuel. Eventually he was like, sorry, new phone.
Yeah, I did get that a few times, but super helpful. I mean, I would constantly be like, what can I do here? Thoughts on this? I mean, that was his baby for so long.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing it in the right way.
So I want to talk about, because we're going to move into our time to talk about ladies and wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were working, so you kind of approached it originally sort of the similar regional updates, pretty routine a couple times a year.
Yeah.
But something interesting happened and the focus shifted to female leadership, females with leadership roles in winemaking.
Right.
Can you tell us about this and what happened?
Absolutely. So I did do a regional California themed list, which I thought I had a lot of fun with, kind of bringing people out of their shell, tasting varietals that they don't typically relate to California, which was fun. But I took a trip June of last year and to Alsace. Mm-hmm. And we went to this one tasting that was all female, and it's called Devines d'Alsace. And I was super into the fact that it was all of these women. And amazing cheese, obviously, because
right.
of Alsace.
But so you're seduced really by the great, cheese.
I was seduced.
Right.
The scent,
Midwest.
The scent drew me in. I know, I'm like, this is so great. And it's just a beautiful region. Yeah.
Seduced by the cheese.
Who isn't, though?
I know.
Lactose intolerant people.
Even, oh, but they fair. Are. Let's yeah, they, be honest.
They're still seduced.
Yeah. Right. That's they and then it, they
it's like the siren call.
And their body is like, no.
Get out.
Right. Oh, it's really sad. And
I wasn't feeling like that when I was there. I was feeling really good.
Good.
So... But I was just, it was so beautiful to see, especially, I don't know, an old world sort of winemaking region with these really amazing women at the helm of the wineries. Yeah. So they're either, you know, their fathers, they're working with their brothers, they're working with their sisters, they're working with their mothers. And it was just really cool, eye-opening thing. So then when I came back and I'm thinking about, what do we want to do regionally, like a regionally focused sort of thing? I was thinking, why don't we do more like concept focused, idea focused? That way we can have wines from all over the world and just support amazing women in the wine industry.
So, I mean, the wine industry has been male dominated for centuries. And now we're in the last, like, especially in the last 10 years, we've seen so many more women moving forward, whether it's ownership, winemaking, sommeliers, et cetera. Was it difficult for you to find a list, or did it all kind of come together pretty easily?
So initially it was a little bit trickier. Now that I haven't, like, the women in wine list has been that way for a while. Now I feel like it's easy because people are bringing wines that I would never have found on my own.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was a little tricky though. There were certain regions that I couldn't find many female winemakers from Germany. They might be there. They might not have been put in front of me yet. I'm not sure, but I was having difficulty with that.
Right.
There were certain regions that had tons. So, I mean, looking at Alsace, just because I had been there and had a personal kind of connection with several of those people, we brought in some of those wines. California, New World in general.
Yeah,
I think it's just harder with, it's just Italy. A little bit more difficult in particular regions, just because it's been like passed from son, father to son, father to son.
Right.
And so even stepping up from speaking with these women in Alsace, it was tough for them as well to be taken seriously. And I love that they're doing it. And I just...
Are you finding that there are connections happening outside of regions, like, you know, women winemakers in France connecting with those in Italy, or are there other ways that you've been able to sort of connect the dots?
There are a lot of, as far as connecting women from around the world.
Yeah.
I think that I've seen more and more kind of like those like international or specific wine, women in wine gatherings, which I would love to compose a list. I don't have one, but I feel like more and more people, as I'm on, like, connecting with women on social media or connecting with women that are visiting that are involved in wine somehow, there's always something new happening. There's like a new Women in Wine conference. There's this happening. There's a lot of opportunity for people to meet one another that aren't necessarily working right next to each other. So I think that that's why, you know, being a male dominated industry, now it's, you can be a little bit more out in the open about, you know, not out in the open. You can be a little bit more connected with other women in wine. It's just,
I know Alpana Singh is a big advocate for women in wine in across the board. I mean, there was a, I saw her post on Instagram in the last few weeks, or she was at a luncheon that somebody had organized. Mm-hmm. Melinda Chang is also a big advocate of that too. So I think that, you know, the more that people are being outspoken and saying like, hey, we're here,
right,
and people are coming together, and it's actually, it's a beautiful thing. And what's interesting is about 10 years ago, I was in Napa, and I want to say I was at Stag's Leap or Behringer, and it was a newer female winemaker. You know, I'm actually, it may not have been either of those wineries, but I'm gonna come back. So about 10 years ago, I was at Napa, and I was at a number of wineries where four of the five places I visited were female winemakers, and we tasted at one of the places, we tasted the former winemaker who was a man, his vintage, his last vintage, and then tasted the first one, and there was a marked difference. And there was, it was a decidedly different point of view. It was, I hate to use this term, but it was definitely more feminine in presentation. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous wine, and it was just going to go forward and get bigger and better from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I've tasted wines where it's the winemaker has changed from, I mean, and I agree with you, and I also am like, oh, feminine, masculine, but it's an easy way to kind of understand it in the context as well. It's like, it just makes sense.
Well, it's just, I mean, men and women have different palates, generally speaking, and it's just, it's really kind of a cool thing that you can see the delineation from one to the next and how there is from their point of view and how it just changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
I feel
is
like
great.
There are a couple producers, I mean, I'm thinking of this one right now because she's just like, she's really amazing to speak with, but she, when I think of having a like a female that touch to the wine, her name is Kelly Fox, and she, I talked to Maggie about her before. I'm just like, I don't know what it is. I just love her.
Oh yeah.
Like, no, I love her.
Please, let's.
So she's in Willamette Valley. She makes these really beautiful Pinot Noirs that we carry at both restaurants, but she came in.
What's the label?
It's Kelly Fox.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she started the winery in, I think, 07 with her father, and she's just, she's very into like everything that goes into making the wine. So she's very spiritual about the wine. She's very like into the sustainability and the environment and biodynamics and all these things, which, you know, in the right wines are delicious. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's not, you know, just because it's biodynamic or just because it's this, but when everything comes together, mm-hmm. But she's also like, she's like genius level. I think she has like, I don't know, a million degrees in different sciences. She's just really smart, but also connected. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like when I taste those wines, I feel that tension, but that balance, that science and the environment. And like, I want to sell those wines because she's awesome. And which when winemakers come to town, I will always, if I can fit it in the schedule for the restaurants, have a training with the winemaker or a training with hopefully, you know, the person that's involved. So if it's a female that isn't necessarily the winemaker, then it's someone else who's important in the winery.
Yeah.
And so when Kelly Fox came in, everybody was just like, really excited to hear her. Her stories were fantastic. And we sell the wine because A, it's delicious, but B, there's a story to tell.
And there's a personal connection too. Like whenever you know something a little bit more, I mean, when I was a server in restaurants, when I got the chance to learn from a little bit more about a specific wine or taste it or whatever it was, it made it that much easier for me. And the desire to want to sell that type of wine was just, it's going to be at the forefront of what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Can we just from your perspective and kind of pushing things forward in your own way, in terms of getting better representation, how do you feel about kind of this idea of deliciousness versus dogma and kind of forcing the issue a little bit? And when you're also considering serving someone a wine that they'll find delicious and goes with whatever they're eating or you know, in that way.
So I think there are a lot of ways to approach this because it's something that I think about all the time. Yeah. The wine has to be delicious first because there are people that will be making the wine delicious and also fit within whatever dogma, right?
Yeah.
But also, I think it's also when you're, the way that I look at it, coming in from somebody who was a server working on a wine list, like where you're like, oh, I want these wines to be me. like, these wines need to represent me. Yeah. I need to have these weird eclectic wines. I need to have these things. And I want to be able to tell people about them, and nobody's going to know about them. So like, I'll be able to tell them. And I feel like that's how you kind of start as a sommelier sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you can tell people that are younger in their career.
Exactly.
Yeah. Totally. Right. And you're like, nobody knows what the wines are. The wine sales go down. Like, at the end of the day, you're working for, it's a business, right?
So
right.
You're doing a disservice make sense to your diners.
So not only are people alienated by wine, but they're also like, okay, maybe, yeah. And maybe they think you're a jerk.
Yeah.
Maybe not. right? Like, you want to be welcoming.
I've had some bad experiences.
Think a lot of people have. Yeah. And I think, and I can go into that later, but it's like the approach for wine for me and wine for the people that I work with is always like open arms. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, don't make me feel stupid.
Yes.
That's I want you to feel smart. I've I want you to feel smart here. So you come back. I want you to feel smart because you should. You should. This is an experience that you desire to sit down, have an amazing experience. I'm here to facilitate, not to make you be like, wow, that was kind of
just
weird.
Just
comment.
Because you think that you enjoy a funky ass barnyardy kind of a wine doesn't mean that I want to.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, don't try to don't try to be too smart on me. Like, I think a lot of that happens a lot. I've seen, you know, wine, coffee, like these things where people like build their personalities around it. It's like, bro, I don't know what you're talking about. And so make it approachable for me, because if I can get into it, that's what you want, right?
Of course. And like, everybody starts somewhere. When I was working in the Dirndl with serving Wiener Schnitzel, I had a really awesome glass of Rosenblum Zinfandel. I thought it was like the coolest wine ever. I was like, it's juicy. It's big.
I totally had the same experience back in the day.
Right? Yeah. And I'm like,
it's easy to grab onto.
I like wine,
you know, and describe.
And so, you know, that's cool. You have, people all start somewhere. And so moving from like that sort of youthful, I just want to be this thing, into having a little bit more experience and realizing that you have to balance the list so that there are maybe those fun esoteric wines, but that things are accessible, you know, and there are wines that are going to be accessible. If someone only drinks a particular label of Napa Cab, maybe I don't have that, but we should be able to serve you something that's similar in the same vein, not scare you, and kind of have the same.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
For folks who are, let's say you're going on a date, you're completely oblivious to wine. Is there a way to ask appropriately without like embarrassing yourself about price points? Because I think the other thing, sometimes people think of wine and they don't even look at the back of the page because they're just like, nah, we can't afford it.
Yeah.
And so is there a classy way to ask, is what's your best budget wine?
I mean,
just
what,
ask that.
What will normally, I mean, if you don't want to actually say it, which if you want to say
some
it,
people,
cool
you
too.
Know, yeah, you're on a date, you don't know.
Yeah, you're just like,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of times the best way is just to kind of point. I'm looking for something similar to this, possibly. Mm. You know, if you can
and
do something where they don't see it.
Instead of hovering over the wine, hover over the price.
Yeah.
I'm looking for something in this realm.
Right.
Kind of
looking for something in this range.
Yeah.
You know, that happens many times per evening.
That sounds like impressive. I'm looking for something in this range. I'd be like,
wow, I'm going to marry him.
I'm going to marry this guy.
He's going to propose.
She's texting in the bathroom.
But the other
this might be
too,
the one girl.
Said
the other
range.
Thing, too, that people forget about is that if it's on the list, that wine director or sommelier put it on there so they like it. They want to have a range.
That's so true.
There's nothing more frustrating for me. Well, then there's also that the jerk sommelier that will come out and like, when you're trying to buy the $35 or $40 bottle and they're like trying to put you in a $70
bottle.
Yeah,
it's like, this isn't a used car, dude. Like, calm down.
Yeah.
Totally.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, the one thing I do have just coming back is that what I like about your approach to focusing on women and wine is that you're not necessarily shouting about it, but you've filtered it in a way that this is what people have to choose from. And if they care to learn more, then it opens their eyes to something that they wouldn't have seen.
Absolutely. We wanted to make it so that because
sparks curiosity.
Yeah, sparks curiosity. And so if you want to learn more, you certainly can.
Yeah.
But you also don't have to learn anything.
Yeah.
Like, you can just drink the wine, which is, I want you to do that.
Yeah.
Mostly. I want
and
you to do that.
When you find out, there's this whole selection. And because of the echelon, that the restaurants are in the upper echelon of dining in Chicago, you're making that statement of like, I just think that's really a great way to do it. And I
appreciate
you.
That. Thank you. I'm really excited that people are excited about it because, you know, when I get excited about something, it's like you just feel it.
Yeah.
Like I just felt it. And when we were trying to put the list together, it was a little bit tricky in the beginning because I didn't want it to come across like it was just, I'm doing this because women and wine.
Yeah.
I want to be like, the wine is really awesome.
Yes.
And these voices are behind it.
Yes.
So it wasn't like, I was worried about balancing out my intention with how it was going to come across.
Yeah.
So I love that. I mean, many times guests come in and they don't even realize there's any sort of theme. Yeah. And that's totally cool too. Right. Or sometimes I'll be talking to a table and they're like, they'll ask questions about a few different wines. And so I'll like briefly say, I'm like, oh yeah, so cool. This is Cristiana Tiberio. She's amazing. She's from Abruzzo. And go to the next one. Or this is Sarah Dionisio from Portugal, whatever. And they're like, are these all ladies? And I'm like, yes! Isn't that cool? And they're like, wow, that's really neat. I didn't even realize that. So that's like the fun part.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then I walk away and I'm like, this is really fun.
I did it. I pat myself on the
back. Yeah,
I did it. So what are your, outside of what you're doing, which is really clever and making an impact on other people who are drinking, but what else, what are your impressions of the Chicago wine scene currently? Because I think that the dining scene gets so much attention and the beverage scene oftentimes does not, especially outside of the beer world. What are you excited about that's going on in Chicago right now?
So, I mean, I think the wine community in Chicago in general is, I mean, it's really big.
Yeah, it's happening.
It's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I moved here, I had very kind people that were already like, hey, do you want to join our tasting group? Hey, do you want to, I mean, there are people moving all around doing education and things like that here in Chicago. So I have to say, in general, really, really nice people, like people that you want to hang out with, and then just high levels of professionalism, which is great. I think the exciting kind of things happening here in Chicago are that people are active in the wine community. I feel like there are more like charitable sort of events that are happening. I know like SKY does this really cool event every year that they just did with a bunch of sommeliers, more of like a wine dinner, but focused on something more that is helping the community. I feel like I always want, it would be nice to have something where, you know, you're working for a greater good. And I feel like a lot of the sommeliers are doing that here. I know that like they'll, for donations for certain events, they'll donate like a night with this person and they'll like, they're interactive, but in a way that's working with really cool charities. Like Almost Home Kids is a really great charity here. They recently did a Women in Wine Focus event. So got to speak for that, which I was super nervous.
Cool.
But it was like, these are things like, you can sell wine and you can do all these things.
If you get nervous, just put on your dirndl.
God, I did that every day. I did that every day, like no big deal.
When in doubt, put the dirndl.
I should find that thing. It would not fit. but you know, just being able to do something that's bigger, and I think that people are getting more involved in those sorts of things that are beyond the restaurant, beyond the wine, and more focusing on human, being human.
And what do you have any recommendations for the general public who want to learn a bit more about wine, whether it's certain wine shops that are doing great things or, you know, events that are outside of like the huge walk around tasting where people are just trying to get drunk?
I know. Those are like really tricky because the guests aren't really, the people aren't really asking things too much. No. Like, okay. Or they have the holders, the little necklace holders, the glasses there, and they're eating cheese.
You're not going to make me use my drink ticket, are you?
Totally.
Hey, you're cool, right?
Is that the whole pour? Do I get
keep going.
Hey, it's my friend's birthday. We brought her here.
I mean, all of us do this, by the way.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm doing it after this.
Perfect. Yeah, it's like, why not? Don't judge. Yeah. So I think that, I mean, like I said, WSET, all these things are really available. Like they do level one classes, which is just introduction. If you're actually like into it and want to do it, Quartermaster Sommeliers also does a level one. Mm-hmm. I think my mom's going to take it, which is pretty cool because she's like really excited about wine.
That's fun.
So that's cool. There are a lot of, I know City Winery, I think, does some educational stuff as well. I know Binny's does some educational stuff like
for
consumers
and VIN Chicago. They have tastings like almost every weekend.
Yeah, so there's opportunities.
What
I think Perman does something.
I do love this question. What are your favorite wine shops in Chicago?
I really love Perman.
Yeah.
I like Perman.
What's not to love about Perman?
I just love Perman. Yeah. I think the great people and really cool shop.
Yeah, Craig rocks.
Yeah. He's really great. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Craig. I feel like this is the second or third shout out to Craig Perman on the show.
Nothing wrong with it.
And what about regions? Do you have any favorite, any regions or like emerging regions that you think that we should be paying attention to?
Or recent discoveries in general that are just really.
So I find, maybe, I don't know, emerging as much as interesting. And I also think I'm always looking at value as well.
Yay.
So like we can have those really cool expensive wines and they're really delicious a lot of the time, but they're also really expensive. So try to find some cool value, which I find in like, we have some cool wines from Hungary, which I like. Dry ferment is really good. We pour a sparkling ferment by the glass at Sepia, and people love it. It's delicious, called Kirill Yudvar. I really love that. I think Willamette is always pulling out something really interesting. And they recently did, it was an event with their Pinot Noirs and Chardonnay. And the Chardonnays are fantastic.
I was just going to say, incredible. I just got back. I was there last week and we took my dad for his 70th. The Chardonnays were my favorite wines that we had. Yeah. Really special.
They have really developed over the, you know, over the years.
And they're making them sort of more like
Old World.
Old World. So they're not like super buttery shards, super oaky.
They have like a nice like vibrancy to them. Yeah. They're great with food.
Yeah.
I'm like shamelessly, I really
love
Chardonnay.
Do you know though how easy, like a lot of the wineries we went to, are pretty small. We went to one micro, so I don't think they have much distribution.
I was in Uruguay last year.
As one does.
I just
tasted some Tanat.
I mean,
like 2 days ago, some more Tanat.
Do you know which producer it was?
I think it was Garzón.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's the biggest one and they have the easiest distribution, but I think like that in my opinion, totally. I think that's a region that we should be paying attention to because talk about value. But they also get the benefit of having the maritime climate where versus like Mendoza, which is literally like, you know, just a flight away from there.
Is Uruguayan wine easy to come by in Chicago?
They're trying to get more distribution. You can definitely get it at Binnie's and places like that.
Nice.
But it's pretty limited in terms of what you can find.
What are like the styles from there that are notable or worth seeking out?
From Uruguay?
Yeah.
Well, like Jenny said, Tanat is their premier grape.
I don't know what that is.
So Tanat is a French grape that Uruguay, like Argentina, was settled by a lot of immigrants from Italy, Spain, and France.
Okay.
And so they brought over with them their indigenous grapes. And Tanat, which actually translates to tannic, tends to be a more robust, earthy, drier wine. But because of the maritime influence, they are softer, they have beautiful minerality, and a lot of their and all the wines that I had there, you know, whether it was Tanat, Merlot, Sangiovese, Tempranillo, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Albarino, they all have that influence, and they're these gorgeous, gorgeous wines, and they're so inexpensive right now. So, you know.
Yeah, you can drink them, you know, all the time.
All the time.
All the time. A Tuesday night wine, perhaps? Sure.
Or a Wednesday morning.
Or Wednesday morning.
Maybe drinking one right now.
Why not?
Under the table.
Before we move into our quickfire round, I do want you to talk a little bit about the work you're doing with the Consorzio of Prosecco Superiore, DOCG.
Corigliano Valdobbiadene Prosecco Superiore, DOCG. Say that 3 times fast.
Oh my God, I would like you to.
Yeah, that's fine, right?
Say it one more time.
I can only do it once. No. Corigliano Valdobbiadene Prosecco Superiore, DOCG, which is tough to teach to guests.
Yeah.
But the wines are awesome. So I'm doing just a bit of education for them. I'm the Sambassador for the, there are three
Sambassador.
In the U.S.
Sambassador.
The Sambassador.
What a flex.
It's fun, right?
Totally.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
So there's, we have, two other women, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast. And I'm working to help educate. So I do like some classes and things for them or just talk about the differences between. So right now people think of Prosecco. They think of Prosecco.
Mimosas, baby.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's okay. So exactly.
Inexpensive, sweet.
Inexpensive, sweet, and bubbly, right?
Yeah.
So Prosecco DOCG is, so DOC is kind of the, it's the flatlands outside, huge production, so large, high volume.
Is this?
So we're in Veneto.
Okay.
So we're 50 kilometers from Venice, like 100 from.
Oh, you said kilometers. You're fancy.
She went to the metric system on your ass.
Excuse me, I can't translate that to miles.
It's like 150 miles.
Exactly right? What he said.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
And it's,
Google it.
it's about 100 kilometers from the Dolomites.
Yeah.
So you're basically in the mountains. You're like Italian Alps are okay. Right there. You're not far from Venice. So you'd fly in and you can drive. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. So Northeast Italy.
Yeah, Northeast Italy. Yeah, I guess I could have started there.
Yeah.
They always say go big and then go small. And I just started with kilometers. So I'm sorry
it.
If I confused you.
No, go on. I love it.
So the region itself is fairly large for wines to be bottled Prosecco. Mm-hmm. Prosecco Superiore is like the top of the pyramid, if you think about a pyramid. And it's in this very smaller region between Conegliano and Valdobbiadene.
Uh-huh.
Conegliano is more east. Valdobbiadene is going into the mountains on the west side. So you have this like really cool mix of ancient soils. There's more elevation. They're harvesting by hand. There's like 70 degree slopes that they're like, they call it heroic harvesting. It's just a different level of wine.
Wow.
So
heroic harvesting?
You got to be a hero.
I love that.
I mean, you got to make sure you don't fall off the side of the
mountain.
Yeah, you're like holding on. When you're there, you're like, wow, people are harvesting. It's really, that's really, really special. Beautiful. So the difference it's not really that much of a price difference from DOC to Prosecco Superiore DOCG. So it's like, why not just have the better quality?
And how much are they like at retail generally?
I think like $20-ish.
Oh, wow.
Are there specific brands? Because like, that's good to know.
I don't know what's available in retail, but I know we carry a couple. So
you should look for
Prosecco Superiore. Just look for Superiore. So you'll see Prosecco DOC, or you'll see Prosecco Superiore. And if it has Superiore, that's just different level of quality.
So
if you find that on a list,
and they're not,
I will drink
and they're not going to be, drink they're not gonna drink be the sweet wines. They're going to be comparable to like a pretty good champagne. Mm. Or,
that's
like,
what I'm here
do
for.
Like Brut style.
Yeah.
Like they're moving a little bit more toward, in some producers, a little bit more toward that, even more like Brut Nature-ish style. So
and
they
is
want
that
some.
Because of the latitude? Is that because of the mountainside? Is that, what is that because of that it's?
Well, that they want to go more dry.
Yeah. What is that? Like, what is it that makes that more dry?
They're just producing it so that it's just in a more, the sugar's getting fermented out. So they're going a little bit drier.
I have a question. Have y'all ever heard, and have I ever spoken about my favorite cocktail in the world?
Maybe.
It's called the Country Club.
No.
And so you get a pint glass or just like a big glass or a tumbler, whatever you got. You're going to fill that with ice. Right, just ice, good ice, hopefully, or bad ice, it doesn't matter. And you're gonna take some Prosecco, you're gonna pour it in the cup. If you got bitters, hit it with a thing of bitters. But if you don't, just drink it. That's my favorite cocktail in the world.
That's it.
Beautiful.
So you should just have
so
a
I'm looking
cup
for
cup
more
Prosecco's Superior.
Or champagnes or things that I can put into this cup with this ice and into my mouth,
into my body.
There you go. Well, you can do that with Prosecco Superiore too.
Okay, Country Club.
But don't you like even just thinking about one little place? We just got this little small education about this land and how it's harvested. And then you've already connected it to a story in a small way
that we
can all kind of latch onto and appreciate, which I love.
That's the point.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's why wine is fun and everyone should get excited about it.
Agreed. Bring it around full circle.
Stuck the landing. Simone Biles over here. Let's stop playing.
Well, that actually is a really good way for us to move into the short order segment. Jenny, this is our quick fire round where we ask you questions. First thing that pops into your head, short order,
quick answers.
No wrong answers. So what would you be doing if you weren't a sommelier and beverage director?
I would be singing.
Yes.
Be singing.
I mean, I kind of knew the answer.
I know. somewhere. In a Dirndl. Yeah. Maybe not.
Maybe
I hope
not.
So.
Who's your hero?
My mom.
What did you have for breakfast today?
I didn't.
Coffee?
I didn't. I wanted to. Yeah, no. Well, yeah, I had this canned coffee here. It's really delicious.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that in.
Yeah, of course. I wanted to make sure I could stop, so I didn't.
Yeah. This is you.
Oh, yeah. What movie will you always stumble upon? What movie will you always watch if you stumble upon it while flipping through channels?
Goonies.
Ooh. Oh. Nice.
Yes.
I love that.
I don't know. I didn't even look at that.
Chug. Yeah, that was a no look.
What, if you have one, is your life motto?
Be yourself.
Beautiful.
Good one.
And what song will make you stop whatever you're doing and dance, bop your head, or just really make you happy?
Get Your Freak On. I miss you.
Good one.
Nice.
What is your last request meal? No limitations.
Probably have to go full circle here on the Indiana thing. Steak, corn on the cob, mashed potatoes.
Beautiful.
Ain't that America? John Cougar Mellencamp just kicks on.
What are you drinking with that?
Oh, man, I was so little when I was having this meal all the time.
I was drinking
grape
milk.
Juice. Right.
Some sort of it.
I would probably be having some West Sonoma Coast Syrah.
Ooh.
Nice.
I'm really into that right now.
Any particular producer?
I love Red Car makes a really nice.
Oh, I love Red
it's
Car.
It's so delicious. Yeah. I have it on a pair. Well, I've had it on a pairing in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the rosé is gorgeous.
It's
we
yeah,
were
I like that producer.
To their tasting room but on our honeymoon.
Yeah.
What's your favorite curse word?
I can't say one.
Yes, you can.
You can curse on here.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Probably shit.
Oh, okay.
Good.
Good one.
Great.
You survived.
Yay, I did it.
We're going to take a little break and get set up for Sip This. So we are now entering into the final segment of the show. It's called Sip This, where every week we bring in something different to drink, and it's appropriate that we are sitting here with a sommelier. I was recently introduced to Old Westminster Winery from another local beverage guy, Michael McAvena, who is representing them here in Chicago. And it's from Northern Maryland, about not quite an hour northwest of Baltimore. And speaking of Baltimore, I just want to give a quick shout out to Elijah Cummings, who sadly passed away. We found that out this morning. So let's raise a cup to him.
Yes. Yep. Legend.
Cheers.
So this winery, actually, it's also appropriate that it is female. It's a female winemaker. It's okay. Three siblings, two sisters and a brother. The brother is the farmer. One sister is the general manager. And the third sister, her name is Lisa Hinton. She's a chemist by education and did training at wineries on both the East and West Coasts. They produce with all wild yeast fermentation, all hand harvested. They also produce a lot of, they do wines and ciders, and they do blendings of those as well. They do some really interesting, they have a Pet Not Piquette orange wine. They have a sparkling rosé and cider. They do stuff in cans too. But this one that we're going to taste is the red blend. It's the Rev, is what it's called. It's the fifth edition. It is made up of 32% each of Cabernet Franc and Merlot, 14% Petit Verdot, 14% Chambersin, and 8% Cabernet Sauvignon, all grown in the hills of Northern Maryland. Maggie's making a face. I wonder.
No, sorry. I was just making it.
It's,
will you tell us what, tell us how you, when you go to taste, tell us your,
it's also, I mean, I have to say that we're drinking it out of Dixie cups.
But so what? What's your,
it is a Dixie cup.
No, I wouldn't even,
it does affect the taste a little bit.
I mean,
it's not drinking out of glass.
I mean, if you're just looking at kind of how you would approach the wine anyway, and if you're thinking about how you do it when you're testing, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But like, I would go, if I was just sitting in a restaurant and I was going to taste the wine, see if it's sound, see if it works, what it's like, I would just make sure you stick your nose in there as mm-hmm. far as you can.
Yep.
Make sure you get a nice big kind of
whiff
aromas, get those aromas going. You want to, you know, you want to make sure the wine is sound. It clearly is.
Yeah.
You know, this wine for me, it's got, it's dark and red fruit.
I mean, you're
getting some of that, like, I mean, it's so funny. I feel like I'm going through a tasting group.
I love this.
I love it too more. Mm.
So it's got cool, like, it's got some cool floral characteristics to mm-hmm. it beyond the fruit. So maybe a little bit of violet, like dried, kind of a dried flower petal, like a lavender almost, mm-hmm. A little bit of that herbaceous quality too. Mm. I think that's coming from, I don't know, possibly coming from the Cab Franc. I don't know this wine at all. So
yeah. This
is,
which
so
I think is actually really
this is
cool.
My first time.
Yeah.
This wine.
This is like a, yeah, they're doing it live. This is
great.
I mean,
it's from Maryland too. It's just like, that's what I think is really fascinating about America. Like every mm-hmm. state in America has wine producing regions, and whether, I mean, some are not good, some are phenomenal, and some are emerging, like Texas Hill Country, Idaho,
and the
LA
climate
County,
is changing,
Virginia,
so that's
going to
keep unfolding.
Yeah.
Ohio. There's some great Pinot Noir from Ohio.
This is savory tasting.
I mean, it is.
I think this could be, it has a nice brightness to it too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
It's aged between 8 and 18 months in French oak, and it's bottled unfiltered. It was bottled in April of this year.
But it's pretty tasty.
You like it?
I like it.
I like the finish. It's got like a little bit of that mouthwatering acidity. So mm-hmm.
it is mouthwatering.
I think it could be really nice with like lamb or something.
Oh, oh yeah. Yes. Like I'll pour this on some shanks.
Yeah. Right?
Or like a bolognese.
I think it goes, get a little bit of that spicy quality.
Yeah.
With something.
Lamb bolognese, baby. Put them together.
Ooh. And it has,
Oh,
just
yeah.
enough earth on it that it's not overpowering. Because when you get those Bordeaux varietals, the Cab Franc, the Petit Verdot, the Cabernet Sauvignon, the Merlot, they a lot of times can be really big and really tannic. And this one, I don't know if that's from the Chambersin, which I'm not familiar with. It's a hybrid. It's a Maryland grape, I think. When did you ever think you were going to say that? A Maryland grape.
I love it.
All around, I'm giving this wine a thumbs
Me
up.
Me too, thumbs up.
It's
and
good, thumbs up.
And it's lady made.
And it's
Come
made.
Come on. That's
and it's a winner.
Up it's
the
a
price.
Winner.
It's on their website. It sells for $30.
And can you get it around here?
It's increasingly being added. That's
but you
what
could get it
Michael,
online.
I know that there are restaurants.
Oh, cool.
I believe Altogether Now, maybe,
okay.
has them.
Okay.
He told me, I can't remember.
That's okay. But we have an idea, at least. Seek it out.
Yeah.
It's good.
But it's Old cool. Old Westminster Winery.
Cool.
And this is the Rev. But they do a bunch of different things. So check them out. Oldwestminster.com, I believe, maybe.
Fun.
Sip this. As in every week, we say if you have anything that you think we should taste or look into, please send us an email to overservepod@gmail.com. If you want to just shoot us a note and say hi, please do. If you want to say anything mean, keep it to yourself.
That's right.
Jenny. It's been a pleasure.
Yay.
Thank you so much for joining
us.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
It was so great.
Really fun.
Yeah.
Really fun hearing about
your smart
ascent.
Oh.
You're smart.
And to all of you out there listening, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Overserved. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Hit banger.
I'm the hottest.